In Play with Pragmatic, made possible by Horton in Britain, a worldwide supplier of engine cooling systems and proud member of the community for more than four decades. HortonWW.com. Welcome to another edition of In Play. I'm Craig Maddock. South Dakota has had the distinction of having two sets of twins represent South Dakota in the Olympics, and they occurred at about the same time back in the 1980s. One set of twins, the Shear brothers, Bill and Jim from Mobridge. The other set of twins from Doland, the Kozlowskis, Dennis and Duane. Today's guest never won a state wrestling title in South Dakota, but later became a national wrestling champ and wound up being an Olympic bronze medalist in the 88 Seoul Olympics, a silver medalist in the 92 Barcelona Olympics. He's Dennis Kozlowski, living in the Twin Cities. Dennis, welcome to In Play.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You know, you have your own chiropractic practice now up there in the Twin Cities. By the way, we probably should mention Duane, your twin brother. What's Duane doing now these days?
He lives out in Virginia, the state of Virginia. He moved out there, close to 15 years ago or more, and he's most of his career he's worked in the insurance industry.
And you're in the chiropractic business in the Twin Cities. How long have you had your own practice up there? What town is it up there in the Twin Cities?
I'm in rural near downtown Minneapolis.
Okay. And how long have you been doing your practice?
I've been a chiropractor since 86, with a 1 year sabbatical as the national wrestling coach, but I've owned my own clinic since 1991.
It is crazy that neither one of you, your brother or yourself, Dennis, won a state wrestling title, but wow, what success you guys had later with college and representing the country in the Olympics. You know, you're a graduate of Doland, but you started wrestling in Webster, right? Who was your junior high school gym teacher at Webster?
It was Chuck Sheppy, who was the also the high school wrestling coach. And he was, I think that's where he, you know, when you go through the gym or physical education classes, you know, he could see who had the skill set. Webster, at that time, was still in the large class school, all the way up to about, I think, 75 or so. And then they dropped down to the B class. But they always had, you know, a couple champions. They were probably a top five large school team at the time. Doug Biersbach was a two-time heavyweight champion, and John Sheely, you know, so he was, I think he was a three-time state champion, I think once in the large class and twice in the B's, and so there was a good tradition there. And it was in hindsight, you look back at how it all worked out. And you know, we were, so the whole backstory is our mom had passed away when we were really young, and my dad had a lot of troubles with it and alcoholism and such. So for 5 years, our family was split up, and my twin brother and I stayed with an aunt and uncle, the uncle being my dad's brother, on the family farm up near Webb. It was in Grenville, actually. And so we attended the Grenville school, Catholic school, for a couple years, and then 3 years at Webster. And because when that closed down, and so we were on a dairy farm, and you know, doing all the work required.
That is tough. Oh boy.
Yeah, stacking bales and cleaning barns, and you know, it was, you know, get up 5:30 in the morning and
do the milking and
yeah. So they call that cross training now, but so we had the size, you know, the strength, and I'm sure Sheppy saw that, and so I ended up getting paired with Kirby Phillips, you know, in the gym class, and his older brother, I think, had been runner up in state, and you know, he ended up being at least a two-time runner up or something, and instead of thumping me, he taught me, you know, you could almost call it like active passive wrestling, where he, you know, we'd be wrestling live, but he'd stop or say, no, you keep moving this way, keep moving that way, you know, put your hand here, move this way, put your pressure there, you know, that kind of thing.
That's huge.
And the funny thing was is that we had an older cousin, Kathy, who through Doug or Sheppy said, you know, could these guys wrestle? And asked my aunt Mary and she says, well, no, they need to do chores, you know. Well,
oh boy.
Seventh grade, my twin brother Dwayne dislocated his elbow in a wrestling practice. And but he could still, once he got the cast on, he could still do the chores with one hand. So I was allowed to wrestle because of that. and my first, you know, season as in 11 and 12 year old division, I wrestled three weekends, district, region, and state, and won the state tournament.
When was the move to Dolan for Dolan High School?
Between our eighth grade and freshman year of high school.
Who was the wrestling coach there?
His name is Ron Larson initially, the first 2 years, who didn't really know anything about wrestling. It was a community I liked, you know, was really into all sports and wrestling. They just weren't that good. I think maybe they had two place winners in their whole career, like you know, maybe a third and fourth place winners or something like that. And but then our older brother Jim, where when we were split up for 5 years, he was in Watertown, which is obviously a pretty good program. So we brought a lot of our knowledge from Webster and Watertown to Dolan. But we weren't, you know, Jim was pretty good, but you know, you talk about not winning state. Well, I was a proverbial late bloomer in every way. I didn't grow for a few years, you know, and like through high school, I wrestled 105, 119, 138, 167, you know. So, you know, I said I had the trifecta. I was small, slow, and weak, you know.
Because as a freshman and a sophomore, did you even qualify for the state wrestling tournament?
I did my sophomore year, but, you know.
Didn't place.
No, I won 19. I was one and done. I think I got fourth in the sections. But, you know, then we started to grow. And just in hindsight, again, looking advantages, I knew I would grow eventually. My dad is. Most of his life was probably 285, you know, and big, strong man. And so I knew it would come eventually. But, you know, when you don't have strength or speed, you really have to learn, you know, techniques and tactics. And I had some moves that were pretty good. It was like a hip roll and stuff. And I would sometimes time the hit of the move with 15 seconds left in the period so I could reverse the guy and then time would run out, you know, and you didn't have to hold him down that long. You know, things like that. And of course, at the lighter weights, you do a lot more, you know, single legs and low leg shots. And, you know, when you're big your whole life, you never really, you get that ability. But being small initially, I never, you know, even so basically from my freshman year in high school to my senior in college where I wrestled heavyweight, you know, I went from 105 to heavyweight, but I could still shoot a little single, you know, as a heavyweight. And Morris was a perfect fit for us.
Minnesota Morris, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I really, you know, should have won my senior year. I kind of, you know, choked on that one.
You wrestled 185 that year, finished third.
167. Yeah, Dwayne won at 185. He was undefeated.
Yeah, you were 167, finished third.
Yeah, and then I was third the year before at 138. So, you know, you're dealing with a lot of changes when you're jumping, you know, 30 pounds and still growing, you know. So the interesting thing, so Keith Haggerty became our coach our junior year, and he's originally from Browns Valley, Minnesota. And he also had never wrestled. But he had a friend named Don Johnson that had wrestled at South Dakota State. I think he's up in one of their top pinners in their history. And he was a farmer at that time, and he would ref like Minnesota, South Dakota, maybe North Dakota, you know, in the wintertime. And he came out and reffed some tournaments in Doland. And he said, hey, if you guys want, you know, come in on a Sunday and I'll show you everything I know.
Wow.
You know?
Nice.
And so it was myself, my two brothers, and Jim Lake. I mentioned him the other day. And I think Larry Herr. You know, there's a handful of us, and he literally tried to show us everything he knew, and he taught us a lot, you know, where the pressure should be for late ride and all that. And that was our junior year, and he came back and repped more tournaments his senior year, and he could see our senior year, and he could see that we had picked up everything he taught us, and we were very coachable. Well, when he was at South Dakota State, the head coach at that time, or the assistant, grad assistant, was Doug Dufty. And he was now the head coach at Morris, Minnesota. And so he said, you got to go look at these guys. Because our older brother now had been, our senior was now wrestling at Huron, and Huron wanted us. We met Doug, and we were totally sold on going to wrestle at Morris, who's to this day is probably the best coach I ever had. And the only thing is he had to convince the football coach to allow us to play football. And they were...
You were offensive linemen there at Morris.
Yeah, they were. And Morris was a football powerhouse. They were a Division III school and a Division II conference, yet they were in the midst of a 4-year undefeated run in the conference. And he admits later that he knew that was the hook to get us to go there, but he thought we might get discouraged. And even the head coach, Al Moldy's like, well, they're pretty undersized. And he says, well, trust me, I met their dad and my hand disappeared when I shook hands with him. So I think they'll grow, and he thought we would get disgruntled, but we didn't. And by our second year, we had a big growth spurt, and I actually ended up being all conference 3 years in football. So we loved it.
It's 1980. I think it's your sophomore year at Morris.
78, because I was, you know, fall, we started school in the fall of 77. So I was 77, 78, and then 78, 79, I was a starter.
But when it came to wrestling, you won the Division III Wrestling Championship, the national championship. And then, of course, you did it again your senior year.
It was kind of a one-year break in there because I had injured my knee my senior year. And my goal that year was to... I in those days, if you won D3s, you got to wrestle in the D1s.
Yes.
So when I won the D3s as a junior in New London, Connecticut, Coast Guard Academy, the next weekend I wrestled in the D1s at Oregon State. And I beat a guy from Ball State, and then I lost a close match to the number 3 seed. But then he had to win 2 more for me to get back in the tournament. He didn't, but it was real, just a great eye-opening experience realizing that, you know, these guys are pretty good, but they're not that good. And I don't have the, you know, I didn't have really mostly the same training partners or the competition schedule. And, you know, that kind of started to plant the seed that I could compete at that level.
You know, at one point, did a bigger commitment start to come to wrestling? Because your senior year in college was kind of just the beginning to much bigger things. And, you know, most wrestlers call it a career after college, but not you, Dennis, or your brother, Dwayne. So when did this Greco-Roman style of wrestling interest you?
Well, it's a lot of, happenstance, if you will. Our freshman year, we didn't play. We were on the team, but we didn't start. And then we were into the wrestling season. And then over Christmas break, a guy named Brad Rangins, who's from Appleton, Minnesota, he was in the midst of his international competition career. He was on every world and Olympic and Pan Am team between 75 and 80. And so this was 77. He had been, he got fourth in the 76 Olympics. He won the Pan Am Games in 75. And he had come home for Christmas and wanted to get a workout. So he came up and worked out with my brother and I, and we had a heavyweight too. And workout is loosely used. He threw us around. He was a 220 pounder. And at the time I was, 177 pounder, but he was a very nice guy. It was another kind of page, chapter, a future of what, even to know someone that competed at that level and what that was about. He had been a 2-time D2 champion at North Dakota State, and I think he got fourth in the D1s. But now he had been invited by the Minnesota club to wrestle Greco for them. So he was a full-time, Greco trainer.
Sure.
So that, again, planted the seed. And then after I won my second, I won my first title, then I couldn't wrestle my senior year because of I blew out my medial collateral ligament our last playoff game at Ithaca, New York. So I had to sit that year, but Dwayne wrestled and won the heavyweight class that year. And then I recovered from it in the spring after the season was over. I got a call from Dan Chandler, who was also still competing but kind of ran the Minnesota club, asked if I wanted to wrestle at the Greco Nationals. And I said, sure.
Then you go and you win it.
No.
You did win it, though, 5 times, national champ.
Yeah, I won it actually 7 times. But, I mean, there was another huge, learning curve there.
I lost track after 5, Dennis.
I wrestled a guy that had been on the world team. I lost, like a 1-0, 1-0 caution out or something. And then I had a similar score to the guy that ended up winning it, Jeff Blatnick, who ended up winning the 84 Olympics. And so I wrestled them both close. And Chandler, told me, you could be Olympic champion. And I found out he said that to almost everybody, but I, I was drinking the Kool-Aid, huh?
Yeah, but, you know, Greco-Roman wrestling was an amateur sport. You're out of college. You know, how you're trying to make a living, but I'm assuming making the USA Olympic team was certainly a goal that maybe you had.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that was definitely a driving goal at that point. So after recovering, you know, I did Greco. I ended up third in the Greco trials that summer, a three-week camp. And again, it was a great experience because I was wrestling the top guys and wrestling them tough. And so then I actually used my eligibility and won the D3s again at heavyweight, went 1-1 at the D1s again. But then I actually blew up my ACL at the end of that camp.
Oh.
And at that time they weren't doing arthroscopic surgery. And I knew a few people that had the surgery and it wasn't that great. And it was one of the weirdest injury in the sense that it was the last day camp. I was wrestling a guy probably outweighed me by 50 pounds. I was 220 then and he was heavy and he tried to do a throw and I blocked it, you know, with, you know, just my leg posted it. And I felt this, you know, sharp pain, maybe let out a yelp, but I got up and walked it off. I thought I was okay. But then a trainer looked at it and he said, I think you tore your ACL. And in those days, they would just...
You'd be done.
Well, that, but, you know, so I had, what they, or at peak, they call it a positive drawer sign that you, you know, there's too much laxity where the ACL should hold the tibia in place. And then they also took, you know, they drained some fluid out of your knee and there was blood in it that kind of confirmed it. So I go back to Minnesota and I see this, you know, the orthopedist and they want to do, he says, well, if we don't do surgery, you won't wrestle again. And I said, well, I don't want the surgery. And I semi accepted that may be the truth, but, I moved up my admission into chiropractic school to that fall. It was supposed to be later than that. And I started chiropractic school but I did rehab. I never really ever had much. I never needed crutches. I never had any swelling. It was a strange injury. It was just like, oh, you don't have an ACL anymore, you know? And by the end of my first trimester, I'm like, I think I can wrestle on this thing. So I, because I still had eligibility, I went back to Morris in January and used it as a step. And my goal was obviously Olympics, but it was a good start to go since I had eligibility. So I went back to Morris for the winter quarter and wrestled and took courses to be eligible. And then I won my second D3 title and I was back in beast mode. So I I returned to chiropractic school, but I also returned to training with the Minnesota club. And that was pretty much the rhythm from then on, is, you know, going to school but training with the club.
And traveling. I mean, you did a lot of traveling. I know in 83, you're in Kyiv, which, of course, was Russia then, now Ukraine.
Yeah, won my first nationals in 83 and beat this Greg Gibson. He was second in the 84 Olympics, but he had also... He was second in the world in freestyle. He won a World Cup in Greco. I went 0-9 against him before I beat him. But that was only over a couple of years because we always met in the finals.
Well, that world championship title, you know, that a long ways from South Dakota's high school state wrestling tournament. You know, what was the difference maker from 1977? You're a senior. You know, you never won a state South Dakota wrestling title. And then 6 years later, you're a world-class wrestler. What was the difference between those years?
Just passion, you know, just a desire. And I always had that. It wasn't anything new. I just, you know, the physical capability just didn't come along. But I remember even as a freshman or sophomore, we'd have a dual in high school, we'd have a dual meet, and, you know, almost every dual meet is an hour away or whatever, you know. And you'd get on the bus to go home, and guys would be joking around, and 15 minutes, you know, most of the team was sleeping, and I was sitting bolt upright, just going over match in my head and just thinking about anything and everything that you could do differently. And that was just in my DNA. And it's the same thing that kept me awake on Sundays during sermons at church. And, you know, why would you have that? Why, you know, you're different in your desire, you know, to just get better. And I was just a vacuum for information. And, you know, that's, and Dwayne was the same way.
That's the deal. You're having success at this time back in 83. Your twin brother Dwayne is with you. You guys are traveling together. You're going to Hungary and to France, and you're both placing. How special was that, having your twin brother with you and competing?
It was really special. And so he initially, you know, had done with college, and he was married and had a son, and was living in South Dakota, and, you know, watching me from afar. And then, you know, in 83, I got made the world in Pan Am teams and was sixth in the world championships. And at that time, and then I ended up first alternate on the 84 team. And he and his wife at the time came out, and we sat in the stands and watched the 84 Olympics together. And that's where we hatched the idea that he would come back to wrestling. And so then he moved lock, stock, and barrel, you know, from South Dakota to Minnesota, and we started training together. And the first year, 85, I let him wrestle at we could wrestle either 220 or heavy, but so I wrestled that heavy to kind of protect him, you know, not having to wrestle the really big guys. And then after 85, and I won the nationals still at heavy, wrestled in the worlds at heavy. I think I got sixth or something there too. And then we switched, because I was simply better by then. You know, I had more experience and more time.
Sure.
But he made a rapid, you know, elevation of his game, you know, just like I had. So by between 86 and 88, we won every nationals, every world team trial, every, you know, Pan Am trial, everything. So we were a pretty good combo.
Still, the bigger goal awaits you, and that's the Olympics. 1984, Olympics are in L.A. What was it like trying to make the Olympic team and only becoming a first alternate? How tough was that?
Well, you can't imagine how tough it was. It was, and the worst part about it was I, you know, keep the language down, but I got hosed in the trials. You know, it's a 2 out of 3 situation, and you know, it was me and Gibson again, and I beat him soundly in the first match. I had a 3-point lift and throw at some point, so I was up 3-0 mid second period, and then I was lifting him again, and he grabbed my leg, which is, he had two cautions already, so it cautioned him out. So I had a resounding win. So, but that was a rare scoring, you know, explosion between the two of us. Almost every match would have been, you know, 1-point match. And then in the second match, we were 0-0 in regulation, and then you go into overtime, and it's a referee decision. And what they're looking for is, you know, if there's no actual scoring, who's the aggressor, who's moving forward, who's getting better position. And I out-pummeled him for, you know, minute and a half, minute 45 seconds. They stopped the match, and we go to the middle to shake hands. I think I'm on the Olympic team, right? And before he raised his hand, the ref says, well, you guys are so close, we think you should go another match. So rather than calling it the way they should see it, they decided that they wanted him on the team because of his experience everything. Oh. And then he beat me in the third match. And it was super tough to just know that, you know, they didn't get a fair shake. But I never really thought that was it for me. I knew I wanted to keep wrestling. And
you thought you'd go another 4 years and try out for 88 in Seoul.
Yeah. So at first I wasn't even going to go to the camp, you know, and then I realized that there was something to be gleaned from that, to go through an Olympic camp and watch the Olympics. And so, you know, the term happy camper, I was the unhappy camper. I went through it, but
yeah, but in 88, not only you, but your twin brother, Dwayne, you both make the team. You're both going to Seoul, South Korea.
Yeah. And actually, you know, 87, I was second in the world championships in 87 in Clermont-Ferrand, France. And I had lost in overtime to a Russian for the gold medal.
The 88 Summer Games, though, you know, the big news during the Olympics, Ben Johnson got disqualified in 100. Carl Lewis got the gold. Florence Griffith Joyner won the gold in the 100. And it was the last time that USA men's basketball didn't use any NBA players. They won the bronze that year. They lost to the Soviet Union. And, of course, North Korea, they boycotted those Olympics. What a surprise there. But in Seoul, South Korea, did you participate in the opening ceremonies that year?
Yeah, I did it all. I had the opening ceremonies. And the nice thing, because it changes every year, I think I started wrestling. My competition started the second day after the ceremony. So then it's 3 days of wrestling. And so I was done by, you know, essentially the fourth day. So I was actually in the stadium. I saw the race between Johnson, you know, when Johnson was disqualified, I was there. it wasn't, obviously you wrestled to win the gold, but it was still just a phenomenal experience. And they things changed a lot after that, because before then, I don't think they really had a limit on how many competitors could be there. And especially at my weight,
there was two groups. There was a group A and a group B at that time.
Yeah, but it was kind of a bloated, a lot of people, some people like guy from Cameroon or something, you know, not necessarily wrestling countries, probably shouldn't have been there, but you still. Also, at our weight, we were just loaded with three or four guys, maybe more, that could win it. Whether, you know, returning an Olympic champion from 84 and other guys that have won, you know, worlds. And so everybody kind of was beating everybody. So a normal tournament for me, you know, internationally would be five matches. You have two the first day, two the second, and then if you're still in it, a placement match. And I ended up wrestling two the first day, two the second, and had to sleep on knowing I had three matches the next day.
Oh.
And that definitely affected me, you know, a lot of, you know, kind of challenge of thought process and focus. And I ended up losing the first match to this Andrei Romsky from Poland,
who eventually was the gold medal winner.
Yeah. So I knew then that I'm not a gold, but I could still win the bronze. And then the interesting thing is there was somewhere in there I had a bye, and but I always watched the other matches, and we used to always say you never want to wrestle anyone from the home country that's hosting it, because there's a lot of manipulation on who gets the calls and warnings and all this, you know.
Uh-huh.
And then secondly, you didn't want to ever wrestle anyone from Yugoslavia, because the head of all the officials was from Yugoslavia. and so to get into the bronze medal match, I had to wrestle this guy named Josef Turkay, who I had lost to the only other time I wrestled, my first world championships in 83, 5 years earlier, he had beaten me 8-0. So not only is he their best wrestler of their team, he was also Yugoslavian. And luckily, I watched him beat the 84 Olympic champion and the 87 world champion two matches in a, I saw both matches, and they had completely twisted the way the rules should be interpreted. And so normally when you were pummeling and a guy would back, if he would back off the mat without trying to circle, he would be cautioned for stalling and have to go down and defend a turn, right? So essentially, you get a guy near the edge of the mat, you're not really pushing him off, but you're trying to hold position to get a caution on him early in the match when you're still fresh and dry, right? So the Romanian who had been 84 gold, he pummeled this Yugoslav off the mat, and this Chinese official cautioned the Romanian for push, like it was stalling for pushing him off, which isn't the way it's supposed to be interpreted, And so then he was cautioned, had to go down, and Yugoslav was a great lifter and turner, and he turned him and ultimately beat him and did the exact same thing to the Russian. So I go into that match thinking I have no chance, I'm trying to wrestle him and the refs.
Right, right.
I hadn't necessarily made a conscious decision, but I started wrestling and I'm pummeling him, and he's backing up, and we're getting near the edge. And then I realized that I can't push him off the mat. So I stop like 2 feet from the edge, and he keeps backing off the mat. And the ref so wanted to call me for pushing him off, but he couldn't because we were separated. So he had to wave, get back in there, And as soon as he came back to me, did a 180 around him and pummeled him all the way across the mat. And every time we got near the edge, I stopped pushing. Eventually, they had to caution him because I was definitely dominating the pummel. And I turned him and, ultimately won the match. And that put me in for the bronze. But I felt like that was a great – I had beaten everybody,
It was 6-0, winning the bronze. Of course, your brother Dwayne, he placed 8th in those Olympics. You also had Jim and Bill Shear from Mobridge. They were at the 88 Olympics as well. South Dakota was well represented there in Seoul.
Yeah, Jim and Bill. And I know with Dwayne, he was in possibly for medal, but he wrestled the BMF Russian, Alexander Karelin. And in his fourth match, I believe he was 2-1 at the time, and he ended up tearing his labrum of his shoulder, and so that's why he had to default to 8th. He couldn't wrestle anymore.
After Seoul, you decide to retire, but you wind up coaching the USA Wrestling Greco-Roman team. But you know what? That didn't take long. I heard this story. While coaching the team, you thought you were still better than members of the team that you were coaching, so you decided to come out of retirement. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what had happened is as much as I liked coaching, I already also had been a chiropractor, and I found that I really enjoyed being a chiropractor more than a coach. And so my wife and I and our daughter, we moved back to the cities, and I started practicing chiropractic again. But I was still working out, you know, just that was just my DNA to stay fit. And they had the National Sports Festival in Minnesota in 90. And it was held at Augsburg College, and we went to wrestle my wife and I. And they watched the tournament, who won the tournament, and Sylvie turned to me and said, "You know, you can still beat those guys." And I said, "Yeah, I know I can."
And so you thought 92 then. You thought you were thinking Barcelona, you're going to go back to compete. And of course, you did. But before that, at the Worlds that year, you placed seventh. You shocked the world, though, in your first match at the 92 Barcelona Olympics. You take out the defending Olympic champion. What happened in that match?
Well, going back quickly about the two-year, it became a two-year plan, and the most important thing was to make that 91 world team, because you had to place in, I think, the top eight or something, because they were at that time they were starting to select what countries could even send a wrestler. So I wanted to make sure, you know, that I was on that team and I placed high enough to qualify the weight class for the next Olympics, which I achieved. I won some matches, but when I placed eighth, I didn't actually lose a match. I had three double caution outs in the tournament.
Three.
Where neither wrestler scored any points, but so they cautioned us both out. So it was a weird thing, but the guy that won the weight that year, Hector Miliani from Cuba, he just destroyed everyone. Like he was a great lifter. I think he tech falled everybody, lifted, 15 point, the match was over. Just so I witnessed that. I saw him do that, but undeterred, then I, I was where I had to be, not wrestling competitively for a couple of years. I at least, secured that and then won the trials. And then, there it's at the Olympics. Now they seed, but they didn't seed then. And so we weigh in, and then it comes out that I've got Ronski first match.
Defending Olympic champ.
Yeah, Olympic champ. But I had wrestled him once in 91, and there was this special turn I was working on, and I almost turned him in a competition, but I got myself a little out leveraged, and I actually tore some cartilage in my ribs, and I had to stop the match. But it healed up, but I knew in my mind that I could turn him now if I did the turn, the way I had practiced it. And that's the way the match went. At some point, I had a chance to turn him, and I secured the lock and turned him for two. And
it was over.
It was over. Yeah. So then, then I won my next three matches and got to the finals.
And it's the Cuban waiting for you.
Yeah, which I thought could have been over real quick, because I saw what he did the year before.
But it goes to overtime.
Yeah, end up losing in overtime. Yeah, so I still wake up with a cold sweat about that one every so often. But it was a great run. It was a great match.
Did you know at that time that was going to be your last match of your career?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As is the custom, retiring wrestlers after their match take their shoes off and they place them at center mat. Did you do that?
No, I didn't. I'm not sure when that started. I don't know if it had started at that time. I don't think about that too much. But
sure,
I knew I was done, and my you know, by then I had my own practice, and we had our second child, and there were a lot of balls in the air that, you know, had to be, you know, kind of controlled, and you know, it was a great. I mean, I have to all my credit to my wife. To, you know, she knew it was a moment in time and enjoy the moment and get the most out of it. But it was time to, you know, move on.
Dennis, I don't remember the last time I was in Doland, but I now know I need to make a trip because I want to go see the historical marker of Dennis and Dwayne Kozlowski right near the post office right there in Doland. And it's that historical marker is right next to a historical marker of Hubert Humphrey, the former vice president, and a marker of the Doland, South Dakota Veterans Memorial. Well, that's pretty high company there, Dennis.
Yeah, the Heritage Wall. Yeah, it was built in 89 was a bicentennial year for the state of South Dakota, and the state offered matching funds for any town that would like to build some type of monument. And Tip Miles, who, you know, he and his wife and family, they were the editors for the Doland Times Record paper, and he got behind it and got everyone else behind it and built a heck of a monument. It was great.
I've seen a picture of it.
yeah. It's I've had a lot of patients and friends, you know, check it out and take photos and stuff. It's pretty special, pretty cool. And then, well, so that was built in 89, so they had a rededication in 90 after 92 because they had to carve another
had to put the silver medalist on there.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's pretty special to you know, last in memorial, you know.
When's the last time you put your Olympic medals around your neck?
Oh, it's been a while. I have them, you know, on display at my house and stuff. And, you know, like my college coach said, it's not the award, it's the reward of what it, you know, it resembles. And it's, you know, it's pretty neat to have them, but it really represents a lot of effort and time and, you know, it's a lasting legacy. So it's great.
South Dakota's had our share of Olympic wrestlers, of course, Jim and Bill Shear and you and Dwayne, Lincoln McElravy, Randy Lewis. Boy, I don't know who the next Olympic wrestler from South Dakota will be, but certainly the Lewis, the McElravy, the Shears, the Kozlowskis, you guys have set an amazing mark for those to achieve on trying to get to the Olympics. You know, you're in a handful of Hall of Fames. South Dakota Wrestling Coaches Hall of Fame, the Minnesota Morris Athletic Hall of Fame, but unfortunately they don't have wrestling anymore.
Yeah, the administration changed 4 or 5 years after I left there, and they kind of went ultra academia, and they moved to a much smaller and, you know, level or lower level of competition. And yeah, I know I would have never gone there the way it, you know, is now. It's still a great academic college, but I think you can still have both. But yeah, I think I'm in about 10 Hall of Fames. So
the National Wrestling Hall of Fame, and of course the South Dakota Sports Hall of Fame. You know, what do those mean to you?
Well, it's great. It makes you, you know, it's stamp, you know, for what you believed in yourself and what you hope to achieve. And I know I read Dan Gable's book when on my, I think it was my sophomore year when I qualified for state. The first book written about his life called The Wrestler. And that was another probably, you know, seed of thought about what it would take to be at that level. And over the years, I've gotten to know him and you know, consider him a good friend. So to be in that level, to compete at the highest level, and you know, I had 12 matches at the Olympics. It's pretty fun.
In Play with Craig Maddock is made possible by Horton in Britain, where smiling at work happens all the time. Apply now at HortonWW.com. If you like what you're hearing, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. It helps us gain new listeners. This has been In Play with me, Craig Maddock. This is a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.